This is why you have to win the division.
You know?
This is why winning the division is a good thing, because then you don't go on the road to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, which, as I tweeted a couple months ago and still stand by, I'm shocked that anybody lives in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, because that entire state has moved to Denver over the last 5 years.
Sure.
So it generally stuns me when I see people like in the stands at Brewers games. I'm like, huh, that's weird. You're all out here flying your Bucky Badger and your Packers flags all the time. Seems a little strange that there are people still in Wisconsin.
I just thought they were Cubs fans.
Yeah. You know. It's been quite a couple days on the tweets.
To be fair,
quite a couple days everywhere.
If it's not the Rockies going through on this series, I hope the Brewers come through the National League. That'd be great.
Yeah, do you? I
more than the Braves or Dodgers? Yeah.
I don't think there are any. See, to me, the Braves are a more likable team.
I don't like
that organization. You know what I mean? Like, I don't like the Braves. I have a problem cheering for the Braves. Of course, I'm not going to go for the Dodgers. See, I guess the Brewers are the most palatable.
I really honestly have nothing against the Brewers.
Yeah.
Like, they're fairly, I don't know. They don't rub me the wrong way, I guess.
Yeah.
Because, like, everybody they're playing in that division that matters is just garbage. Like, the Cubs and the Cardinals. So, like, you're rooting for them, if they're going to be good, to beat the Cubs and the Cardinals most of the time. And then you see them, you're like, oh, there's nothing bad except for, you know, Ryan Braun and Josh Hader. Super racist.
Yeah.
Besides those two guys, the rest of the team seems fine.
Yeah.
Christian Yelich is going to win the MVP, and he's like, he's a nice enough guy. Doesn't really have much, just don't search his name on Deadspin.
Yeah. I've heard less than great things about Jeremy Jeffress, but you know, whatever.
Sure. But I mean, if you're going down the roster, I mean, every roster's got dudes that are, not
that your politics are not going to align with, shall we say,
not safe for work. Let's just say.
Yeah. That's true.
So anyway,
we welcome you into the latest edition of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. I'm Tyler Mon.
And I'm Anthony Masterson, and it's been a long day.
It's been a long several days, especially if you've had to watch both offenses that Anthony's had to watch in the playoffs.
Yeah, no. The best part about working in sports television, especially when you're carrying playoff baseball games, and both of your teams are in the what amounts to the Final Four, my fandom, of course, the Rockies and the Indians. It's really fun when those teams lose, and not just lose, but like lose boringly.
Yeah.
Like those two teams have combined to score 5 runs in 4 games. So it's just like, it's just bleeding out. It's just like a slow death, like watching these two teams so far in the playoffs. But we're not here to talk about me. We're here to talk about the Colorado Rockies. And where their offense went.
Where they go from here. Your Colorado Rockies.
Yeah, I did. They're yours.
Colorado Rockies. 2-0 loss, or 2-1, 2-0 deficit going into the 9th inning of game 1. Rally to tie it.
Which was great.
Mike Moustakas is at the plate with a base available, and they decide to pitch to him, and he hits a walk-off single.
I don't know, 0-2, fourth straight fastball that Adam Ottavino had chucked at him, 0-2. Second time that Adam Ottavino's given up a run-scoring base hit on an 0-2 count when he did not give.
Hitters were 0 for their first 36 against Adam Ottavino on 0-2 counts. Not a good time to not be able to finish off batters. No.
And honestly, he had looked like he was good auto up until that point.
Yeah, I mean,
even the stuff that was hit against him was fluky, lucky, whatever it ended up being, you know. And then, And then the next game was great. The offense looked better. They definitely got more runners on base.
Yeah.
It would appear, that was fun.
Doesn't really matter when you can't do anything.
They definitely did not score more runs in the second game, though.
No, they did not. They, in fact, did not score any.
Oh, right, okay.
Which is, generally, I don't know if this is confirmed, but I don't believe you can win a baseball game scoring zero runs.
I actually looked this up yesterday, and people are 0-400,784 when they don't score runs in a baseball game.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
So it's pretty, the numbers are pretty convincingly.
It's pretty skewed.
Runs.
Yeah. Yeah.
The numbers would suggest that you should score runs.
I agree. I've been saying that for years.
Yeah. You know, but I've
you
always been
know
on the scoring runs bandwagon.
Though. Yeah.
You just know this team's going to hit. So I don't know. It's, there are so many things to get to. We have so many things to parse out of the first couple days of the National League Division Series. The Rockies were recording this late on Saturday night, because I had a broadcast tonight. College hockey season has started somehow.
Who knew?
So we're recording this late on Saturday night. The Rockies will be opening National League Division Series game 3 in like 18 hours, something like that. Man, not even that. And,
it won't be on our air. It'll be on MLB Network. So
yeah, that's right. You know, it's very good that the Rockies are coming home. That is very good. the Rockies very nearly came home down, or even in this series, 1-1.
Would have been great,
but they could not execute with bases loaded, one out in the ninth inning in game 1, and they could not execute at all in game 2
with a runner on third base and nobody out late in that one.
Yeah, and it's maddening, and I tweeted this out, and I think that this hits at the crux of the issue, and tell me your thoughts if you think the same. What is so frustrating about this is what all of us have been saying the entire season was the problem with this team, and it's being exposed right now on the biggest possible stage. All season long, what all of us on Rockies Twitter have been saying is that this is a very pedestrian offensive team, especially when Nolan Arenado and Trevor Story are struggling. And right now, Nolan Arenado and Trevor Story are struggling mightily. Trevor Story has regressed to 2017 Trevor Story in 2 games flat. And Nolan Arenado is pressing. And Nolan had 2 hits the other day. You would think Nolan was 0 for his last 9,000, given the fucking morons we've had to suffer on social media as of the last few days.
I have definitely stopped suffering fools on Twitter.
Here's the thing that I don't get. And you're gonna have to hold me back, man, because we're gonna get fiery here. You and I both grew up in the Rocky Mountain region. As I have said many a time, my first love in life was the Denver Broncos.
Sure.
I have since evolved past my NFL fandom because the NFL is a joke.
It's harder and harder to root for it every year.
And it is a very nearly 100% return rate that when the Rockies make it into the playoffs and all these noobs show up in our mention, it is very nearly a 100% return rate that the dumbest possible takes, when you click on the profile, it's either a Broncos avatar or a Broncos banner photo, or the first tweet is about the Broncos, or it's just some, you cannot arrive to the scene on October, whatever the hell it is, 6th, and all of a sudden proclaim yourself an expert. We had some clown just a moment ago who I responded to that the take, and so obviously, like, the way they regurgitate the fan is the way conservatives regurgitate Fox News. It's the same exact bullshit where it's, he said he wanted to play in big games, and like it or not, we need more from him. What is your insinuation there? Is your insinuation that he's not trying, that his heart isn't?
Nolan Arenado,
like,
of course. What,
are you suggesting? Nolan Arenado is the conversation piece here. What are you suggesting? We need more from him. What does that do? Yeah, everybody would like to have more from Nolan Arenado right now. Everybody would like to have more from Charlie Blackmon right now. But just saying we need more from... everybody fucking knows you need more from him. What kind... you think that's some revolutionary take? Oh, the best player is not playing well. That's not good enough. Yeah, no shit. So what do you... like, what is the point of that? But the fact that it's just the same garbage take because... whoever the hell is out there, Mike Evans or Mark Kisla or James Merrillat or wherever other morons are out there saying, well, he's the one who said he wants to play in big games. Now he's popping up. First of all, he had 2 hits the other day. He had 2 hits in game 2.
So you can shut up about that, because I don't think anybody else had a multi-hit game in game two. It sure as hell didn't feel like it. And second of all, like, driving in runs is bad now? Like, the other day, he has an RBI sacrifice fly. They're ripping on him for having an RBI sacrifice fly now.
So, by the way, Nolan Arenado is one of three Rockies with three hits or more in the playoffs, the other two being Gerardo Parra and Trevor Story. He's the only Rocky with multiple runs batted in so far in the playoffs.
Huh. Interesting.
And listen. Did he have some tough...
Are we saying that Nolan's had great playoffs? No.
No, of course not. Did he have some tough at-bats? Absolutely.
Yeah. But, like, these takes that, like, oh, well, he said he wanted to play in big games. Nice pop-out, asshole. What? Like, this is the most difficult sport on the planet.
Yeah.
This is not as simple as, well, you just got to draw up a better game plan. You got to run the ball. Like, this is not easy. And the insinuation that, like, they're not trying hard enough. We need more. Fuck out of here. Like, that's the problem. It's more entertaining for those of us who have been Rockies fans forever to be in our own little corner booth in the bar watching a game on July 19th where we're having conversations with other people who understand the game and what we're going through. And then when we have to – and, like, admittedly, we're not used to having to deal with the crossover fans because they don't show up until – turns out the Broncos are super mediocre and sign guys with questionable criminal backgrounds and have a head coach who doesn't know what the hell he's doing. And they're
also has a questionable criminal background, just FYI. Right.
And now they cross over, and for whatever reason, because Denver sports media for 25 years has been dedicated to driving wedges between fan bases in town, so it becomes fashionable then to rip on this team. And it's just like, admittedly, we don't have to deal with these people that much. And so then when we have to deal with them during the playoffs, it's mind-numbing to have to try to explain to elementary school students algebra. You know, and not like in a we'll refrain from using names, but not in a it sucks to be right all the time kind of way. But like, it's so maddening.
Basic
to have
sports
to deal
news.
With this idiotic garbage.
Yeah. Basic sports news, Denver.
So it's just like we're going to talk about a lot of things today. But the overarching lesson of all this is it's a best of five series. And to me, and maybe I'm seeing this through rose-colored glasses, I think this team is too resilient and too good to get swept by the Milwaukee Brewers in three games. They're coming home to Coors Field. Yeah. I feel okay. I don't feel great about where they are, but I feel okay about the next 2 days. If Herman Marquez goes out and throws well tomorrow, you're telling me the Milwaukee Brewers, if you get a lead on the Milwaukee Brewers and whatever dude they signed off the street last week who's starting in game three.
Wade Miley, yeah.
You think Wade Miley scares anybody in the Rockies clubhouse coming home to Coors Field?
No. I just want to know where Rockies fans get off ripping on a guy like Nolan Arenado. That's my biggest thing. And, of course, we see it from the Broncos Abbeys, but I saw some tweets from people who know better ripping Nolan Arenado. And that's a problem to me. Like, Nolan Arenado, since he's come in the league, has only been the dude for the Rockies. He's won five straight gold gloves. Dude averages 40 and 120 every single year. Where the hell do you get off trying to rip that guy at this point when he was a key cog in leading this team to back-to-back playoff appearances for the first time in franchise history? How can you see two games from Nolan Arenado and say, this guy needs, we need more from this guy. This guy needs to do better. Where the hell did that entitlement come from? You are Rockies fans. Where the hell
did you learn that entitlement from?
Yeah, if you think that that's how this works and you just get to say, oh, whatever, Nolan Arenado sucks and you have Troy Tulowitzki syndrome, go root for the Dodgers. I don't care. We don't need you here. Go root for the Dodgers. Go root for those fucking leprechauns, Justin Turner and Max Muncy. Nobody cares. Nobody wants you here. Your opinions are absolute shit.
Well, and the thing that I think, like, and, you know, we'll get off the warpath a little bit, but, like, people need to be fucking fired up. It's game three tomorrow, man. Get fired up.
They should be. This could be the most explicit podcast we've ever had.
Patrick Saunders would hate this episode.
You would hate this podcast.
This is, and we'll, I was talking to a coach of a team the other day
who his team did not play a good first period slash half of their game. And he said, I went in and I motherfucked him for about 5 minutes. And then I went soft and we went tactical and I told them what they needed to do. And then I encouraged them and they came out and they played well.
That's 3 for 3. Yeah.
That's how we're going to go.
That's encompassing everybody in the locker room. Yeah.
Start off fiery. Then we're going to have a little conversation. And then we're going to get you set for tomorrow.
Some guys need their asses kicked. Some guys need to be told, like, good job, kiddo. Some guys need to be left alone. We're doing all three here, guys. Come on.
So the thing about the Rockies is, and we had this conversation the other day, in football, as I'm sure some of our new followers and listeners may be aware, generally you leave things on the shoulders of your quarterback in the biggest moments. In basketball, you're looking for your best player down the stretch to take the big shot. In baseball, one player cannot carry a team. As much as it seems possible, even during the biggest stretches of their careers, generally the best players in baseball are still being helped by guys around them, whether guys are getting on base, right, or guys are, even if it's a mythical thing, if guys are providing protection in the lineup of some kind. Generally, it's a thing where that stuff all goes in the flow of the guy in front of you and the guy behind you. So what bothers me about pinning this on Nolan Arenado is the fact that when you look up and down the Rockies roster right now, nobody is doing anything offensively. And so to say this is Nolan Arenado's problem, Trevor Story has been swinging at pitches before they leave pitchers' hands, like, it seems like.
You wonder if he could even see in those two games in Milwaukee.
And, like, I'm not trying to rip on Trevor Story. He's a young guy. He's playing in his first ever postseason series. He's obviously got a whole hell of a lot of nerves.
Like,
David
Dahl's
been the same way. David Dahl's been going first pitch swinging way too often.
Dahl's 0-11 in the playoffs. Yeah.
Jeez. This is a team that is a young team and looks like a very young team right now. But, like, these numbers, among Rockies regulars, Gerardo Parra, who I guess you can call a regular, is 4 for 8. And then Nolan Arenado is 3 for 12. The Rockies, as a team, as an offense, are hitting like 145 in the playoffs.
That high.
Nolan Arenado has 3 hits. Trevor Story has 3 hits. They each have a double. Nolan has no doubles. Nolan has 3 singles. Nolan has 2 RBIs. Nolan has 5 strikeouts, which have not been pretty. Nolan hasn't walked. Like, no, Nolan does have 2 walks. I keep looking at the wrong line.
No, Nolan's got no walks. You're right. Come on, man. This, yeah.
Oh, no, Nolan does have no walks. Yeah, yeah.
That's, listen, you know, talk to the guy who's been drinking all day. Come on.
So, like, has it been a good playoff year for Nolan? No. But to look at this and pin it on Nolan, like, what? Charlie Blackman's 2 for 11. DJ LeMahieu is 2 for 12. Ian Desmond has somehow taken everything that he's done in his Rockies career and made it look good by comparison to his first 3 games of the playoffs. Ian Desmond has looked like one of the worst baseball players I have ever watched.
I want him so badly out of my face forever.
I feel like Ian Desmond, and we've talked about this a lot, Ian Desmond is a great dude.
Yes.
Like,
he's 100% great dude.
He's every
good
time
person.
We have a Rockies clinic for Boys and Girls Club, Ian Desmond is the first guy who's there. Like, Ian Desmond is a phenomenal guy.
He's an all-star person.
And we've talked about how you feel bad for a guy who scuffles that bad, but this is the playoffs now. The fact that Ian Desmond has started all 3 games and was starting against a right-handed starter the other day who does nothing but carve up right-handed hitters, like, what are you doing at this point?
Every at bat that he has been a terrible at bat. Even when he's gotten on base, it's been like a Baltimore chop up the middle that he barely reaches on.
Yeah.
And even when he got to third base with nobody out late in that game in game two, as he stole a base,
it was a 1-0 game.
It would have been thrown out with a good throw.
Yeah.
The throw got away. He got to third, and you're like, well, there you go. Ian Desmond making things happen.
Yeah.
He has been so awful. And all of his at-bats, they've ended in called strike threes or, like, just weak-ass shit. And you're just like, come on, man. Like, It's we don't it's want to so hate bad. You, like, no, but you're making it so
that's
easy.
That's the thing. Like, it's so difficult to see a guy like Ian Desmond and all the work that he does. What a obviously a good teammate he is. How much the guys
he
like
is.
Him. Such a good looking dude. He's got like the most adorable kids I've ever seen. They came out to a baseball camp a couple of years ago for Boys and Girls Club, and they were awesome. Like, his family seems great, but right now, he has no business being in this lineup.
Oh, no.
He's not an asset defensively, so you can't even make the Tony Wolters argument of like, well, his glove is good enough that it keeps him in.
He nearly messed up that play late.
Nearly messed up the play, if not for Nolan's foot at third base. Yeah. Oh, we need more from Nolan Arenado. If not from Nolan's foot. That's the other thing. You bitch and complain about Nolan's offense. Nobody talks about the fact that he's playing as good of defense as you've ever seen from
outstanding
him in the playoffs.
Defense.
But whatever.
Well, he's not getting hugged. Yeah.
No, Desmond doesn't make a catch on a line drive that thankfully ends up turning into a force out at second base. He's just not – there was a learning curve that I expected at one point Ian Desmond was going to reach replacement level at first base, and he is not. And the fact that he's still in the lineup every single day, it was maddening and it was frustrating in May and June and July, and it has reached a critical mass. Now, because you're in the playoffs, and the fact that Ian Desmond is 2-for-13 with a couple of singles, at least one of which was a little weak squibber of a ground ball to the left side of the infield, 4 strikeouts, at least 3 of which I'm pretty sure have been looking in big spots. Why is Ian Desmond in the lineup? Chris Iannetta is 0-for-8 with 3 strikeouts.
He's like 1-for-25 in the playoffs in his career, man. Like, I'm sorry. Get Tony Wolters in there.
Broke the bat over his leg the other day.
Yeah.
And Tony Wolters.
That was the best part. That was the best part of the entire postseason so far for the Rockies. Well,
that's the most contact Chris Iannetta's made with that bat.
Yes. Hi-oh.
Tony Wolters is not going to get you a whole lot of hits, but Tony Wolters defensively adds more value than what you're missing right now.
Iannetta. Netta, all-time great dude. Like, but I'm sorry, man, that this is not for you right now.
No, and that's the thing. Like, it's literally on the brink now. And if they run out a lineup tomorrow, in which, you know, which they're going to. I mean, they'll run out a lineup
tomorrow. Against a lefty, Desmond's going to be in the lineup. And honestly, where he should be in the lineup, against a lefty.
Right, right. Yeah. And that at least somewhat makes sense. Yes. But if they were going to start a righty tomorrow, I'm still pretty sure Ian Desmond gets in
the lineup. Of course he would be. We said in the last podcast, we're past the point of having to be mad about Ian Desmond being in the lineup.
Right.
We can just be mad about Ian Desmond and what he does once the game starts. Because usually it all sucks.
I got a text from a buddy the other day who said, you know, all season long, Bud Black has been starting a veteran first baseman and a veteran catcher when the numbers would suggest he should do otherwise. Why is everybody so furious today, just all of a sudden assuming in the playoffs against a right-hander he's going to go with McMahon and Wolters? Like, I don't know. Should he? Yeah. Is he going to? Haven't we learned by now? No.
No, of course. No, like, and also, like, the funny thing is, it doesn't make any sense because there's no consistency when it comes to Bud Black's decision making in this process. David Dahl has had very, very poor at bats, and he should not be in the lineup right now because he has been very, very bad. It's okay, Zoe. Yeah. I know you're all right. Sorry, my dog is in the crate and she is freaking out. You're fine, Zoe.
She can feel the anger.
She literally just knocked off the blanket that's on top of her crate. I don't even know. She's still in the crate.
The rage.
She's a velociraptor. David Dahl should not be in the starting lineup. He has had very, very bad at-bats, some of them coming in very, very big spots. Gerardo Parra has been great in this postseason. He's been fantastic. He's got 4 hits, leading the team. He puts together good at-bats. He's a great defender. At this point, you would put Gerardo Parra in the lineup, and there's no problem there, and that's fine. But young guy, not performing, veteran comes in, great. Even reverse that. When Parra was underperforming, David Dahl was put in the lineup, and David Dahl performed well down the stretch. Didn't perform well now. Parra's back in the lineup. Fine. Veteran not performing at the first base spot. Young kid behind him who has come through in many, many big spots, especially late in the season, had a phenomenal at-bat against Corey Knebel in game one. A 10-pitch at-bat, was down 0-2, worked a walk against Corey Knebel, who hasn't given up fucking anything in a month and a half, and he can't see the field.
Can't see the field.
Can't see the field.
Nope. Got to keep Ian Desmond in there. Got to keep the attributes of his smile or something.
And I can't imagine that it is just because they're paying Desmond a lot of money. We're past that. You know, like in the playoffs, I think we're past that.
Yeah. Yeah. I have absolutely no explanation as for how you can watch Ian Desmond play right now and think that's a guy who deserves to be starting on a Major League Baseball playoff team. I don't get it. And it's not, you know, I don't want to continue just ripping on Ian Desmond because it's like, you know, they're defending Nolan and they're just using Desmond as the whipping boy. That's not the case. I mean, you know, Dahl has been a ghost. Chris Iannetta has been a ghost. DJ LeMahieu has not put together a strong postseason.
Everybody
so far.
But like Gerardo Parra has been a ghost. We could just go down the line.
Pretty
much. Yeah.
And so the frustration from our standpoint comes from this concept of Denver Sports Talk Radio's Nolan said he wanted to play in big games and Nolan's not carrying them.
Yeah.
Not how it works. It's not how it works in baseball. You know, Nolan has multiple RBIs. Nolan does have more hits than anybody on the team except for two other guys. Like, it's not been a good postseason for Nolan. It's been so much worse for everybody else. That's why the Rockies find themselves in this spot. The Rockies have no business being down 0-2 right now. The Rockies
should have been at least 2007.
Yeah. I don't think the Rockies have outplayed us. I also don't think they're better than us because they're not even close. Like, I don't look at the Brewers and think, oh, this team is scary. Like, listen, I look at the Brewers and think, you should have lost game one.
They won 96 games. They're the most wins in the National League. Good for them.
If the Brewers get into a series with the Dodgers right now, I think the Brewers get swept in that series. I think it's a five-game series the most. If the Dodgers get Hyun-Jin Ryu and Clayton Kershaw throwing the way they did in game one and game two, and then you go to Walker Buehler in game three.
The only thing I will say, if that is, you know, God forbid that it ends up being the case, the series wouldn't start in L.A. It would start in Milwaukee.
Right.
They're asking you Ryu and Kershaw on the road. And Ryu has not been good on the road. He's been untouchable at home, bad on the road. Wonder what that's like, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's weird.
Basically, what we're saying is get out of here with this weak-ass shit, Rocky.
Yeah, like if you're going to have a take, just try to be smart. And ironically enough, Colin Cowherd just popped up on my TV. Have you seen this commercial? And obviously it's,
of course I have. Come on.
The network that you work with. What the fuck is he talking about that the handsome kid gets the ball on the playground?
What is
he talking about?
I don't know.
I don't understand that at all. Like, normally they package those commercials and I'm like, oh, that's kind of clever. I could sort of see that. But he's like, he's talking about how like quarterbacks are always good looking and they're so debonair and and he's like,
they got to be quarterback heel, not, exactly.
Right. Think about where it starts. On the playground in the fourth and fifth grade, who gets the ball? The good looking kid. That never happened. Never in my grade school were we like, all right, we really need, we're down six. There's a minute left before the bell rings. We got to get the ball to Kevin Young now.
Sounds like you weren't the handsome kid in your elementary school.
Well,
so that sucks
I've
for
never
you.
Been the handsome kid anywhere. Yeah. So I don't, obviously I was never the quarterback. But like, I don't think we were searching for the best quarterback based on looks, especially because we were, you know, prepubescent kids who had no idea what that felt like. Anyway, neither here nor there.
I don't know, man.
But what I'm saying is that's a dumb take, and a lot of takes we've had to deal with are dumb.
Yeah.
What the crux of the matter is all season long we have all been saying this is a very, very pedestrian team, made even more so when their two best hitters, or three best hitters if you want to include Charlie Blackmon, are not hitting. And right now, none of those guys are hitting enough. But the maddening part about it is, well, I think several things play into
it.
But like, you listen to the broadcast, and it's like, oh, this formidable Rockies offense led the league and runs scored.
Nelson Arenado and Carlos Gomez.
Nelson Arenado.
Travis Story doing so well.
That doesn't mean that the Rockies had a good offense because they scored a lot of runs. That's a Kisla level take too.
Weighted runs created plus, which is a metric, the league averages 100, and however many points above or below that you are, it means you're that many percentage points better than league average. If you're 110 weighted runs created plus, you're 10% better than the league. Team stats, it counts for league, counts for park, counts for all that shit. The Rockies finished 25th in weighted runs created plus this season. 87 was their number. The only teams in the National League that were worse offensively when you take in league and park and everything along those lines were the Padres, the Marlins, and the Giants.
And the Rockies play where again?
Coors.
All right, Coors. The most offensively friendly ballpark in the history of baseball. The Rockies are not a good offense when things are not going well, and when things are going their best.
But they were second in the league in runs.
Right. When things are at their best, the Rockies are a good offense. I don't think you look at the Rockies and think, like, that's a murderer's row. That's the 95 Rockies. That's a scary-ass team.
That's the Blake Street Bombers.
Everything, when everything is at its best, the Rockies have three dynamic hitters. Maybe four with a healthy David Dahl. But, like, even Charlie Blackmon this season, the numbers were there. I don't think Charlie Blackmon really scared people this year to the same way that he has the last couple years. But, like, DJ LeMahieu has never scared anybody. DJ's a guy who he's a good hitter for what he does.
He's a guy you don't expect to beat you and then beat you.
And then he can beat you.
Yeah.
DJ is great for what he does. Actually, Nate Kreckman had a really, really interesting thought the other day that I think almost certainly comes true. Nate texted me the other day and goes, what do you think the odds are DJ becomes a Cub this offseason? And I was like,
well, like they already had him.
Yeah, exactly. And DJ he's been forever the one that got away for Theo Epstein. Theo Epstein gave an interview a couple years ago to the New York Times to Tyler Kepner, in which he said, that was the first deal I made, and I so badly wish I had that back.
Oh, really? You don't regret paying Carl Crawford all that money, or regret paying Jason Hayward all that money, or regret paying Tyler Chatwood all that money, or regret paying Brendan Morrow all that money, or sorry.
Wow, but, not his money.
Not his money, that's true.
But I thought that was a really interesting take. But, like, DJ's bat it's a one-dimensional thing for the most part. Yes, this year there's been some pop to it, whatever. But, like, Carlos Gonzalez.
DJ's been fine.
Yeah, DJ's been fine all year. Yeah. And that's all you expect from DJ. That's great. Carlos Gonzalez, not a terrifying bat anymore. Cargo had a couple of really good stretches this season. Can still be a very good bat, but this is not the Cargo of 2011 that you expect when he comes to the plate. He's going to do something electrifying every single time. Once you get really past the 5-hole in the Rockies lineup, maybe the 6-hole, there's nothing left. There's nothing left. When you get a base runner on and you know that the next dude in the lineup is Ian Desmond, it's like you might as well go turn it off and go get groceries.
I mean,
and that's what this comes back to. And all that being said, we're going to turn this around and have some reasons for optimism. We're getting to the middle stage of these three stages of grief. There are still some things to be optimistic about, but all season long, we've been saying these are the issues. And this is not to be like, oh, Rocky's Twitter, we're smarter than Jeff Breidich, whatever.
No.
These were correctable things that the Rockies refused to address. And whether that's because they were paying Ian Desmond money and so they didn't want to go out and get Justin Bour, or whether it's because I have no idea.
Drew Butera.
Yeah, Drew Butera.
Was there one?
Was the waiver deadline.
Their one offensive get. Yeah.
They made one offensive move and it was Drew Butera. Now, all that being said, like, Ryan McMahon and David Dahl, I think, are two dynamic offensive acquisitions. But there's one, it reminds me of a Seinfeld episode. Jerry's apartment gets broken into because Kramer leaves the door open, and Jerry describes to him that he paid all of this money for the most secure lock on the market, and then says it only has one designed flaw. The door must be closed! Yeah. And that's the way, like, Ryan McMahon and David Dahl have to be in the lineup in order to be good. And David Dahl's been in the lineup in the playoffs and hasn't been good. But Ryan McMahon has not gotten opportunities. Like, they keep trotting out the lineup that has been so substandard all year. And then you get blanked in game two and you only muster two runs in the ninth inning in game one. And you think, maybe it's the Coors Field hangover.
Yeah, they've scored one run prior to the ninth inning in, four games this week. One run prior to the ninth inning, and it was Nolan's sack fly in the first inning in the wild card game.
Yep. So
no, there's a very easy case to be made that if Ryan McMahon was given the majority of starts against right-handed pitching, the Rockies would have won this division by five games.
Oh, I would agree. I would agree with that. I would absolutely agree with that. If they had started with a platoon mid-season with Ryan McMahon, I think they'd run away with the division.
Yeah.
And that's not laying it all at the feet of Ian Desmond. What that is laying it at the feet of is the fact that a lineup constructed that way plays completely differently than when you have a lineup around a right-handed hitter who struggles in those circumstances. And it's not just because Ian Desmond struggles, but hitters in front of and behind a hitter who can do something different in that situation feed off of that differently. Yeah. That's how everything is interplayed in baseball. And I understand that that's complex and difficult, but like if you're Bud Black and Jeff Breidich, how do you like? I don't get how you get to this point in the season and think, oh, I don't know what to do.
The
like,
one thing
throw I, your hands yeah. up in the playoffs.
The one thing I will say is that Bud Black clearly has the temperature of his clubhouse.
Yeah,
I mean, if you read Nick Groke's article on The Athletic, and Nick has been turning out fantastic content all year. With The Athletic.
Hashtag content.
After that Dodgers series, Nick Groke wrote an article, I think this just a couple days ago, about what Bud Black said when he addressed the team after that series. And the fact that it resonated with so many guys in that clubhouse. And they came out and they were like, you know what? We're going to be all right. At that situation, when you're 155 games in and you just got your dicks kicked in, the season is over, basically, unless you win out. And your manager at that time can still come to you and give a speech that makes everybody in that locker room feel that they can go out and win the rest of the games and make the playoffs. That means your manager is good and he understands what is going on. He understands what the clubhouse dynamic is. He understands when guys need a kick in the ass, when guys need to be coddled, when guys need to be left alone, like I said before. He understands that part. So you cannot fault Bud Black for not knowing what it takes to have the fortitude to make that clubhouse work. That being said, he must not be doing the Ian Desmond for Ryan McMahon thing because of what he thinks that it might upset in the clubhouse. And that's what it has to come down to at this point, because he has shown that if the numbers aren't there, you are going to be switched out, and that is fine. The only outlier is Ian Desmond. And if it's a Bud Black call, fine. That seems that it's coming from the top. If it's not Bud Black, I don't think Bud Black wouldn't do that, would make that call. But at the same time, based on what he's done, I guess. But like with I can't imagine Jeff Breidich being like, yeah, you know what? I love Ian Desmond so much, even though he paid him all that money, you know. But at the same time, it's bizarre. No one really knows unless you're in the clubhouse, obviously, and I know that. Like, but I somehow can't find it in me to be blaming Bud Black because of how clearly he knows what he's doing with so many facets of this team. The pitching staff, he has figured it out. Like, how often have we really actually bitched about the pitching staff this year and the choices made among the pitching staff this year?
Yeah.
About, like, why would you bring this guy in here? Besides, like, Brian Shaw, like, coming in too much or Jamie coming in too much. At that point, Bud had to pitch those guys at some point, you know, and hoped that they figured it out. But when he realized that the season was riding on whether or not he pitched those high-priced, horrible pitchers this season, like Shaw and McGee, he stopped pitching them.
Yep.
He knew. Like, in September, Brian Shaw saw the field, like, fucking twice. Yeah. He's getting paid $9 million this year. Jake McGee saw it in garbage time, like, four times. He's getting paid $9 million this year. Bud Black figured out when it was a lost cause for this season.
Yep.
So, like, if he figured out with the pitching staff, why would he not figure it out with the hitters? And I understand that he's a pitcher. He's, like, I work with Mark Sweeney. Mark Sweeney was with Bud Black in San Diego for a long time. And I've talked to him about Bud Black. And he said that Bud is fantastic with players. Players love him. Bud knows pitchers and pitching staff and how to control a pitching staff like no other. Bud does not have a great feel on hitters. And that makes sense. because he's a pitcher. He's always been a pitcher. He's a pitcher's guy. And that's why the Rockies hired him, because he's a pitcher's guy. They hired him because they thought the offense would figure itself out because it's at Coors Field, and they wanted a guy who could figure out the pitching staff. And they got exactly what they wanted, because Bud Black has been fantastic for this team, in my opinion.
And here's the thing. I think, like, if you would have said one day, 5-10 years ago, that the Rockies would make the postseason on the strength of a top third pitching staff, I think you just assume, man, that's a team that could win a World Series.
Yeah.
Because offenses throughout franchise history have been that good. I think, like, to have an offense that's this bad, like, you should be able to acquire the right guys, leave them to their own devices, and have them be a top five offense in baseball.
Right.
The problem is they have not done that. I don't think the problem is so much lineup construction and Bud Black's managerial decisions and whatever. The cards that Bud Black has been dealt, the fact that Ian Desmond is a guy who has to be in the lineup every day, the fact that your catchers are Chris Iannetta and Tony Walters.
Andrew Butera.
And Drew Butera, who for some reason was acquired. The fact that, like, when you're throwing out dudes who are not offensive players, there's only so much you can do.
Yeah.
And imagine if the Rockies had pulled off a deal for Jose Abreu last year.
Oh, man. Come on, man. Don't do that to us.
You know? But, like, but what I'm saying is, like,
the what if they acquired game. I mean, come
you
on.
You know, but what I'm saying is, if you have the right pieces in place, I don't think there's a whole lot else. Like, I don't think Bud Black has to be some master manipulator of lineups and how to put a roster together in order for that team to be good offensively.
No,
like, I think as long as you have good hitters, Coors Field figures out the rest for you offensively.
But again, that's they finished second in built the roster. Runs.
Yeah,
you know, that, and that's what everyone's going to come. It's all about. So all it's going to come down to, man. That's all it's going to come down to.
The other thing that I think
and things won't change because, hey, they finished second in the league in runs. Their offense was fine. If you can look at just that and think that, then you are part of the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing that has been a huge issue is the approaches that we've seen. This is a team that everything they did well down the stretch, everything they did well in Chicago, they've forgotten completely. Yeah. Well, dude swinging at first pitches.
Listen, they scored 2 runs in 13 innings in Chicago.
Well, but they had much
the 25th guy to get the go-ahead run there.
But the Chicago game, with the exception of a couple of at-bats, like David Dahl's first pitch swinging a bat, that game at least felt like they had a plan going to the plate. This team, over the last two games, has looked so out of whack. It just looks like a bunch of guys who are really, really tight.
Like Matt Holliday had a terrible at-bat.
Matt Holliday's at-bat
with one out and a runner on third in the seventh inning or eighth inning, whatever it was. Like a guy you don't expect to have a bad story.
Trevor Story's at-bats have been like his worst at-bats from last year on steroids. His at-bat yesterday, in which he swung at a pitch that bounced 3 feet in front of the plate. Like, you can just tell dudes are up there guessing. Dudes are tight. And and maybe that's where this episode is going to turn the corner. Because I feel the Rockies won 36 of their final 50 games at Coors Field this year.
Yeah.
And this team started being a good, cocky Coors Field team toward the end of the season. This team started being a late 90s, nobody comes in here and beats us team at Coors Field toward the end of the season. And there is something about the aura of that ballpark over the last 2 months, the fact that they've had so many comeback wins, the fact that they've had so many walk-off wins, the fact that they've had so many wins where they just beat the hell out of opposing teams.
Yeah.
Where opposing teams came in and the Rockies beat them by 12 or 15 runs. They had a game against the D-backs a while back. They beat them, what, 18-3?
They started 11-20 at Coors Field. And the last game they lost in that stretch was a Jacob deGrom start at Coors Field where they got dominated. And they were 11-20. And you're like, what the hell's wrong with this team? They're better on the road. What's going on with this team? After that, they were 36-14 at Coors Field. That was mid-June. Mid-June on, they went 36-14 at Coors Field.
And it just felt like something clicked with that team where they realized, oh, Coors Field is another element of this team. And whether it's the Kyle Freeland factor or the fact that, you know, they've been selling out for the last couple of months and the fans have been into it, there is something that feels different about this team being able to come home to Coors Field and realize what an asset it is for them. And not only that, but I think the louder things get about Coors Field, I think in part because of the pushback of Rockies fans, because the Coors meme that we've all created has alerted everybody else around the country to just how much Coors Field is talked about. I think Coors Field becomes a factor for opposing teams now, too, beyond just, oh, pitchers hate Coors Field. Sure. It's a graveyard. Like, I think Coors Field has the potential to get in opposing teams' heads. And not only that, if there are 50,000 people there who are loud and into it, Coors Field is a great home field advantage type of place.
Of course.
I don't know, man. I don't feel like this team... I don't feel like the Milwaukee Brewers are markedly better than the Rockies.
When the Brewers,
I don't think you watch the first two games of these series and think, oh, man, this is a division champion against a wild card team.
The Brewers walked into to Coors Field in the middle of May and took three
of
four.
The Rockies were awful.
When they were terrible at Coors Field, and they took three of four. Wade Davis blew one of those games in the ninth. It was one of his first or second blown saves of the season, but he was in a bad stretch then. Coors Field is a dangerous place to play right now. The Rockies were the best team at home of any team in baseball in the second half.
Yep.
It's a different place. And you can, you know, whatever point you want to make about the offense at Coors Field, the team feels like the Coors Field is in everybody else's head now. And I think the fans feel it too.
Yeah.
And that's why you should not pour dirt on this team right now.
Right. Right.
Because the Rockies in the first two games of the series, they lost them, of course. They didn't play well. They didn't hit well. They didn't do anything well.
Yeah.
The Rockies have the two best pitchers, obviously, of course, if necessary, two best pitchers of any team in this series going in the next two games, in Germán Marquez and Kyle Freeland.
Yep.
They've got an offense that has been outstanding at Coors Field over the last 3-4 months. Yep. Outstanding. Not just good. They've been outstanding. And their pitching staff has been dominant at Coors Field. It's not like they're winning a lot of 11-9 games.
Right.
They're winning.
Right. It's not 1998.
They're winning 10-3. They're winning 9-1. Like they're winning, you know, 7-3. Like they're winning big games. They're winning games and they're winning them early. They're choking people out early. And if you score early at Coors Field with this pitching staff, the other team is not going to score a lot of runs. And that's what the Rockies have been doing for the last 3 months. Like their pitching staff is good enough that if they score early, they're going to choke you out. And we've never, ever said that about a pitching staff in the Colorado Rockies.
Here's the thing. Like, you're telling me if the Rockies go out tomorrow and jump on Wade Miley early and get a lead and Germán Marquez starts to cruise, you're telling me if the Rockies put a big win away on Sunday, if you're a Milwaukee Brewers fan,
you're not
you
a little bit
confident,
worried with Kyle
you feel
Freeland
confident
coming
about Monday.
Yeah.
Kyle Freeland is going on Monday at Coors Field. That atmosphere, if I'm the Brewers, I better close it out tomorrow.
Because
I don't want to see Kyle Freeland on Monday in his hometown ballpark pitching for his hometown team
in front
of 50,000 people that he grew up with in a night game. I don't want to see Kyle Freeland in that game.
In a night game when it's going to be cold.
Yeah.
It's going to be 40 degrees at game time.
That was
on Monday.
Nick Groke tweeted,
if they get to Monday, it's going to be 40 degrees. And you got a guy whose main thing is sinkers and cutters in on the hands, getting weak contact. You're going to play well in that game? Really? Okay.
Nick tweeted a quote from Carlos Gonzalez where he said, I hope it snows. They're not used to that shit here.
Cause they got
the dome.
Yeah.
In Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Like if I'm the Brewers and I don't close it out tomorrow, I don't feel great because I know Monday is an uphill battle. Sure, you feel okay going back home, but like when you look at those first two games,
if you're going back home, you've already
you're on your heels.
You're
that
already
means
fighting.
You've lost two straight, right?
Yeah.
And the Rockies 14 times this season have won three straight games or more.
Yeah.
This is not something that is impossible, and you're not playing the 98 Yankees. That's not to say that the Brewers are a bad team or to discount what the Brewers have. I think the Brewers are a lethal team if they get a great lead.
Team. Yeah.
If they get a lead, their bullpen is incredible. Yeah, if they can get into the middle innings or the late innings with a lead, they are a lethal team. They're a fun team to watch.
2015 Royals style bullpen.
Yeah, exactly. But if you can jump on this team early, here's the thing about Wade Miley. Prior to this year, Wade Miley has been a mediocre to terrible major leaguer. Like, Wade Miley last year made 32 starts for the Baltimore Orioles.
You can't say that because the Orioles ruin every pitcher. So,
well, and the Orioles, I don't know if you can really call them a major league team either. But last year, Wade Miley, 5.61 ERA and 32 starts, a 5.27 FIP. The year before in 30 total starts between the Mariners and the Orioles, a 4.45 FIP, a combined 5.37 ERA. When he was with the Red Sox, a 4.46 ERA. Like, Wade Miley is not Cy Young. Wade Miley is not a guy who you come in game three and think, oh, God, it's game three now and they're throwing Walker Buehler.
Yeah, like, right.
There are a lot of reasons to be optimistic. And if I'm the Rockies and the first two games have sucked so bad, the only mental cure for games one and two in this series is Coors Field.
Yeah.
The fact that you know you're going home to a place where you cannot be beaten on more nights than not over the last 3 months, that's the difference.
And you have the two best starting pitchers. Yeah.
Yeah. And you've got your two guys going in game three.
You've got arguably two of the top 10 starting pitchers in the National League since the All-Star break, basically. Like, Marquez led baseball in strikeouts in the second half. Kyle Freeland all year has been one of the better pitchers in the National League in the top five.
Yeah. You know what? I'll say it right now because it could be the last one of the season.
Sure.
Let's just blow it out. If the Rockies get tomorrow, they win this series.
I fucking agree.
I'm saying it right now. I'm saying it right now, baby.
They gotta get tomorrow, damn it.
They have to, because if they don't, then it's over.
I know.
If they get tomorrow, they win the series. Because if they get tomorrow, there's no way in hell they lose on Monday. There is no way
that I know it's Marquez's turn of rotation.
We'll play this back next week over a laugh track. It's gonna be, there's no way.
The only thing, God forbid, they go out tomorrow and lose.
Yeah.
You're not gonna have Kyle Freeland pitch in the series.
Yeah.
You're not gonna have Kyle Freeland pitch at home. In the series.
Yeah.
Like, Kyle Freeland, he won you the wild card game, and he needed to. Yeah. He was phenomenal. The best pitch performance the Rockies have ever seen, given the moment. If you don't, like, I wanted to throw him tomorrow so badly. It's on normal rest for him. I know he pitched on short rest on Tuesday. I wanted to give the hometown kid a chance to keep his team season alive, only because, God forbid, you lose game three. What if Marquez comes out and shoves, gives a one run in seven innings, and the Rockies score none? You know, I'm just saying. Like, it can happen, obviously. What if you throw this series and you lose in three, and Kyle Freeland
Antonio Senzatella got a start.
Well,
and obviously the Rockies had to do what they did.
Right. And all Senzatella and Anderson.
Yeah, they do great.
Fucking well. You know, like
Tyler Anderson, by the way, I'm so happy for Tyler Anderson to have gotten it figured out. Because people jumped on, and granted, I mean, we were frustrated. Everybody was frustrated with Tyler
because
Anderson
he was really bad for 2.5 months there in the middle of the season.
The beginning of the season, like at the All-Star break, we were all furious that Tyler Anderson hadn't gotten All-Star consideration. Sure. That's how good Tyler Anderson was. And then everybody forgot that.
Well, because he was terrible for 2 months.
But his last 3 months
was great. And then in the playoff, he put up six innings of like one run ball in the playoffs on the road. Like, and you give him no support. So it's going to go down as like, oh, we got a loss. No, man. Right. Like, Tyler Anderson pitched his ass off.
The Rockies said there was a mechanical issue, his release point.
Sure.
I think we got it sorted out.
For a guy like
and
that,
immediately it's worked.
He needs like every helping game because he's not an overpowering guy. He needs everything to be perfect. Release point, mechanics, and he's got weird mechanics anyway. He needs a lot to be perfect. And he and he was, and he's been awesome for the last 2 weeks.
Like, and that just makes me really happy.
Yeah,
it makes me
really happy. Absolutely. Well, so we needed him to be good. And he was great. It's not his fault they lost game two.
No. Yeah, and I agree with you on the point about Freeland. I really thought they'd go with him for game three.
If he doesn't throw, it's going to be such a regret for everybody involved. Freeland, Bud Black, Jeff Breidich, fans. It's going to be such a regret. And I understand Marquez is that guy. He's the dude. Herman Marquez is awesome. He's one of the best pitchers the Rockies have ever seen in terms of stuff. And I have no, I'm not worried about him at all tomorrow. The only thing I'm saying is the narrative about getting a Denver kid to pitch his team in like through the postseason. That's why you have to win tomorrow, in my opinion, because I just want to see the moment of Kyle Freeland walking out to the mound in the first inning when it's 38 degrees and everyone's wearing sleeves and he's going out there without fucking anything on. Just like,
he's gonna go
shoving and throwing it in the Brewers' faces. I want to see that moment. That's what you have tomorrow.
I just if they break out early tomorrow, if the Rockies go out and do one of their four-run first innings tomorrow, I feel pretty damn good about the way things go. Because I just. If they win tomorrow, man, and you throw Kyle Freeland with a chance to even the series, like
you're feeling pretty damn good about yourself, you know.
You're gonna be that is the Milwaukee Brewers against 50,000 people. It's not the Milwaukee Brewers against the Colorado Rockies. That's the Milwaukee Brewers against the 45,000 in the other dugout.
Yeah, come on.
Well, true. 41,000 plus standing room only on the party deck. I don't know, man. I feel pretty damn good about it. The Rockies need to get back to some better pitch selection. They need to realize that not everybody is going to be able to hit home runs, and it's okay sometimes to just try to get on base. Like, that's fine for a lot of guys in the lineup. But this is a team that if they can get it figured out tomorrow, and if they can get it figured out tomorrow early, I feel really good about the rest of the series. And
like literally any first inning run, I think the Rockies can win that game. Like, honestly,
because what it does for you mentally as a baseball player,
the thing like
is when you feel like, all right, now we're back into it. Now we're off the schneid. Like, that goes so long. That goes such a far way in making you relax and get back into your groove that you can't. I mean, the first two games of the series, because they were a carryover of the frustration from Chicago and Los Angeles, like, you could feel how tense that lineup was every single at bat. And if you can break through early, that's when this team rediscovers its identity.
Yep.
And I feel pretty good about this team's identity.
So do I. And I think that's going to be it tomorrow. I think that's I mean, obviously, they need to score more runs than the Brewers tomorrow. That's my big thing. I would think that would probably
go well. The other thing that's frustrating is tomorrow, if they go out and they score 17 runs and Nolan has a three-homer game, we're not going to hear from any of the Broncos avies who go suspiciously quiet things go well for the Rockies.
That'd be weird, yeah.
I've noticed. And then on Monday, when the fan is back to talking about whoever the hell the Broncos play tomorrow.
I just don't even know.
Then they'll all disappear for Monday.
Oh, it's the Jets, because my wife's been talking about it. She's a Jets fan. Sorry.
Jets. So that's the only frustration.
Yeah.
The Rockies are pulling it back. We don't ever get to have the intelligent conversations with those people when things go well. We just get them jumping in and infuriating us when things go poorly. And then it leads to 10 minutes of us screaming profanities at you to open the
podcast. No, yeah, and then it leads to like them tweeting, oh, triggered much, bitch? And we're like, okay, then you're done. I'm sorry. Like, yeah.
Oh, my God. There's a headline on Rockies.com. Three things the Rockies must do to stay alive in the NLDS. I think it only comes down to scoring more runs than the Brewers, right? It's really only just one thing.
I think that's it. Yeah. I just score more runs than the other team. That's an infallible strategy.
It's also just like, it's good. There's good stuff in there from Thomas Harding. But yep. the headlines that the people put in, I don't know if MLB put these in to break these up or if Thomas did, but they're sort of like underhandedly, sarcastically hilarious. Number one is keep pitching, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, you want to keep pitching.
Yeah, you got to have somebody throwing balls at some point.
Number two is swing at strikes.
Oh yeah, you got to swing at strikes. You can't swing at balls. Yeah.
Part two of that: don't swing at balls.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Swing at strikes.
See?
Don't swing at balls.
Yeah.
And then the last one is enjoy being home.
Oh, yeah. Sleep in your own bed.
I think those are all good pieces of advice.
I saw Rookie and David Dahl at Starbucks today, and Rookie was being a very good boy because he had his month of training.
Yeah.
So, you know.
He's being so good.
He's
did you see the little gift bags that he made for the team?
I did. Yeah.
And Bud Black apparently must have his own beer?
Which I want a lot of it.
Yeah, me too. I have to go find it because I forgot what the name of the beer was.
Oh no, my wife just got home and the dog is in the crate and just saw her and it's going to be a nightmare in a second.
Oh god. Bud Black German Schwarz beer from Denver Beer Company. Wait, let's listen in. I heard a shake. A jingle of a collar.
Oh, that tail's going. It's only a matter of time at this point. We should probably sign off. It's gonna.
Oh God!
Gonna
yeah, we're gonna sign off. So
hey,
tomorrow
they should win
baseball,
tomorrow. They should definitely win tomorrow. Let's do that.
They should win tomorrow. Yeah. They should do that. Let's talk to you again on Tuesday when they're going back.
Yeah,
to
how about
to
that?
Play a winner take all game five.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if not, thanks for sticking with us.
We'll have a moratorium at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But through the yelling and the
swearing,
facts and now the getting you going. Thanks for sticking with us. And he's Anthony. I'm Tyler. We'll talk to you on Tuesday. Travel day back in Milwaukee. Love you.
Love you.
Bye.